It's the one place on Earth where the river, the sea, or large lakes, and land come together. So they're really fascinating, dynamic places, all sorts of stuff going on here. Interesting to think about scientifically and from a management perspective as well.
What are some of the things that are happening, both at your estuary and in estuaries in general?
Where these three habitats come together, the land, the sea, and the freshwater, they're also a place of intense sort of human interest. We tend to build on them. We like to walk around them. We like to be on their shores. So it's a place where management concerns also converge. Management issues can be specific places, but there's certainly general concerns such as water quality issues typically coming through the rivers. There's issues with non-native species, for example, in your neck of the woods. I know the Lake Superior Reserve is interested in invasive crayfish, a crawdad, and interestingly, we're interested in exactly the same thing here. It's a different species, but it shows some of the similarity across systems.
Describe to us the Tijuana Estuary.
The Tijuana River Estuary is a pretty large estuarine system, a coastal wetland. Our watershed is about 1,700 square miles. And what makes us unique is that we sit right on the U.S.-Mexico border. So the southern end of the reserve is the border. And the Tijuana River snakes its way back and forth across the border, flows into the city of Tijuana on the Mexican side, and then the last few miles are here in the United States. So it's a really sort of complex socio-ecological system we have going here. So most of our flows are coming straight from the city of Tijuana in Mexico and then into the U.S.
The border wall sort of interferes with the best functioning of the estuary, or just makes it a little bit more difficult to manage it?
It definitely makes it more difficult to manage it in terms of the barrier to sort of movement of people, really, and sort of exchange of ideas and being able to get people to appreciate this system. We're fed by the Tijuana River, which is in the city of Tijuana, but it's not easy for people in Tijuana to get down here to know and appreciate, to love, and to advocate for this place. So that's one issue. And then even trying to sort of collaborate with scientists and managers on the other side of the border, different sets of laws and different regulations, certainly makes it more complicated. In terms of the barrier itself, most areas we have sort of this triple fence or three layers of barriers. The river is in such an urban area, the barrier itself probably doesn't impact the flow that much, given that it's such a highly urbanized area anyway. The Tijuana River in Tijuana is a concrete channel, which certainly impacts what we have going on down here where it flows into this natural area. But yeah, the barrier itself probably isn't that big an impediment to the sort of natural functioning of the system. But just, again, it's difficult to cross that border. The border waits can be long. So if we want to get together with our colleagues in Mexico, just that can be an impediment. Just the sort of getting together and meeting and talking about some of these issues can be an impediment.
When we were down there visiting, Jeff, you brought up an interesting point about the Border Patrol itself. And you talked a little bit about how part of your mission is to educate these people on how to best preserve the estuary. Talk a little bit about that as well.
Part of border security is the agents down here, the human resources. So they're out, they're on the trails, they're up on the hillsides, they're down in the river valley. And in general, these folks have a pretty good sense and like being outdoors and like being part of the natural system. So we're trying to work with them to understand what they're doing and understand the relationship between border security and environmental security and try and make the two go hand in hand a bit more. When we talk about what we would like to see here in terms of border security, it's the human resources and getting people, frankly, paid a bit better so they can stick around longer. San Diego is an expensive place to be. So the longer they're here, the more they can learn about this place and learn about what we have going on down here. They do help us with our environmental stewardship mission in some senses, in that they're who most folks are likely to contact when they're down there. So if they're out in the ecosystem, perhaps sort of in a place they shouldn't be or having some sort of impact that we would like to avoid, Border Patrol will see it and let us know about it.
We're talking with Jeff Crooks. Jeff is the director of the Tijuana River National Estuarine Research Reserve in San Diego, California. Jeff, what's the general condition right now of the Tijuana estuary?
What I like to say, it's probably the largest, most intact, healthiest system left in Southern California, which says a bit about our Southern California estuarine systems, right? Most of them have been highly impacted. They've been developed. There's roads across them and highways and bridges and development along the shore, and the sand dunes have been converted to condominiums, that sort of thing. Ours is not that way. It's a largely intact system. To get from my office on the north side of the estuary down to the border, you have to go all the way in and cross just one of the two bridges crossing over the river. So it's a relatively large intact system, and that's what lets it be the special place that it is. There are a lot of issues, like right now it's raining, which is sort of unusual. Here in Southern California, we only get about 9 or 10 inches of rain a year, and it usually comes in just a few spells and none at all during the summer months. So when it rains, we invariably have water contamination issues from the city of Tijuana. That often brings sediment and trash along with it as well. So there are definite management issues. But the fact that we have this large intact system where the tide can come and go through the river mouth, and we have this large intact wetland. Wetlands provide ecosystem services. They can help take up the nutrients in the water. They can slow water flow and help clean up the water before it gets into the ocean. So the fact that that's all still working here, at least to some degree, sort of makes the place the nice natural area that it is.
Can you talk just a little bit about the actions of the tides? I mean, that's something that we certainly don't think of here in our Lake Superior estuary, although there may be some tides on Superior. I don't know. But can you talk a little bit about the actions of tides and how that affects the estuary?
Sure. I'll just say quickly, from my understanding in Lake Superior, there's probably some tidal action, but there are water level changes. They're sort of on different time scales and seiches and sort of waves moving around Lake Superior can change water levels. So there is some sort of similarity in terms of changes in water level. Ours are primarily driven by the tides. Every day we have 2 high tides and 2 low tides per day. So the estuary is filling up with water, draining, filling again, draining twice a day. And that's really the lifeblood of this system, that connection between the estuary and the ocean. I mean, I mentioned a little bit in terms of sort of the water quality issues, you know, the fact that if we didn't have that tidal action and that contaminated water was contained within the valley here in the estuary, that would present problems for us. But having that tidal exchange and this allowing the river water to go into the ocean, that helps build beaches. So when the water's flowing out, sand is leaving the estuary and builds our beaches. The water's coming in, it's delivering the more oxygenated, cleaner ocean water. So, yeah, we like to say it's sort of the lifeblood of the system. We have complicated tidal exchange. Some systems tend to close off, actually become coastal lakes for a little while, and they can be important nursery grounds for fish, that sort of thing. Tijuana River estuary doesn't really do that. It's a larger system that we try and maintain that tidal connection.
Does the mixing of the water, the salt and the fresh water, does that create a special environment that is exploited by certain types of animals? You're a marine biologist, so you probably have studied some of this, but what are the effects there?
And that's one of the interesting things about these places, is that where the river meets the sea, and is this gradient from fresh water to salt water is really important. And a lot of the creatures in here, the plants and the animals, have to be able to adapt to variable salinity conditions. Sometimes, like right now, it's probably pretty fresh. Next week, it'll probably be pretty salty. So there are what we call brackish water species, and some folks think brackish means grimy or stagnant. Brackish really just means sort of intermediate salinity. And for us here in Southern California, we don't have rain between March, April, and October. It's the dry season. It might rain once and get a tenth of an inch or a thing, but it's basically dry. So we don't have any naturally occurring perennial streams down here. So most of the time, and even during the rainy seasons, we often don't have big river flows. So our river actually doesn't flow much of the time. A lot of the time it's a dry riverbed. So what that means is that we don't have a whole lot of these brackish water specialists. It often is a fairly marine system, and then when it rains, we get pulses of fresh water. Now, further north or in other parts of the country, you definitely get those permanent gradients of salinity.
So what types of plants and animals are unique to the estuary?
There are a variety of them. Probably the most characteristic is our salt marsh plants, which really define the system and makes the coastal wetland what it is. So these are plants that are adapted to live in high salinity conditions. Evolutionarily, it's terrestrial plants that are invading the sea. So they can both handle being underwater a little while with the tides, but also are able to deal with the higher salinity conditions. And that really is what makes this place tick. These meadows of salt-tolerant plants that form our coastal wetland. And these things sort themselves out depending on tidal level. So we have one species, cordgrass, which is able to live lowest down. It's basically the only species that can handle a fair bit of being covered by the tides. So we have meadows of this cordgrass that support endangered birds and all sorts of things. Then as you move up the tidal zone, you start adding more and more species until you're in the upland where you have sort of the full range of plants that would be characteristic of a more terrestrial area. So, yeah, it's the wetland plants that really hook this together, create the habitat then that you have the fish swimming around the tidal channels and crabs and snails, and then that supports the migratory birds that land and the resident birds.
Are you guys having problems with invasive species, both plants and animals?
Yeah, quite a bit. We have what we call sort of the natural invasions. For example, the water's been warm here the past few years, so we're starting to see these invasions of warm water tropical species from Mexico starting to appear up here. And this happens every once in a while. They've been around longer now than they have in the past. So we have sort of these natural invasions where species naturally move up the coast. But from a management perspective, what we're really concerned about is species that people have moved in. In the ocean, it's in the ballast water of tanks or on the hulls of ships, that sort of thing. If it's on the land, it's grasses and trees and mammals. I mentioned the crayfish before, that people have moved around for all sorts of different reasons, either on purpose or on accident, that are impacting our system.
We're talking with Jeff Crooks, director of the Tijuana River National Estuarine Research Reserve in San Diego, California. I want to go back to a comment that you made when we were touring, and you talked about urban drool, and it struck my ear just like a bell. I mean, I thought, what an apt description. Can you speak just briefly about urban drool?
Yeah, of course. So urban drool, in general, these systems here in Southern California are dry most of the time. When it rains, the rivers will flow for a little while. And then for the summer months, March, April through October, November, the dry season, there'll be no river flow at all. But we're hungry for water, I guess thirsty for water, here in Southern California, and we import a lot of our water. San Diego imports about 80% of our water from other places, pump it over the mountains from the Colorado River, from the desert into Southern California, or from the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta up in Central California. And all that water moves down here, and then people are watering their lawns and washing their cars. Typically, a lot of that happens during the summer months. So what we've done is we've created this system where we now have these year-round flows in our tributaries, and that's this urban drool. It's not big, raging torrents, but you just add together all of the irrigation water, and sometimes it's just water line breaks or washing cars. It accumulates, and just this trickle, this slobber, this drool coming into our coastal wetlands, and that can really have profound effects. So, for example, I had mentioned the invasive crayfish that we have here. That's a consequence of this urban drool. It's a freshwater crayfish that historically we wouldn't have had that crayfish, but where we find it now is in what used to be salt marsh. So when we put all this fresh water into the systems, we see it converting from salt to freshwater habitat. And our saltwater habitats tend to be less invaded, certainly by plants, but also just more generally. So when we add this fresh water to systems, it can really change the makeup of the system. It can add freshwater species native, but it also can bring in these non-native species as well. And it's a big concern for us.
I'm sure that every city, even ours here in northern Minnesota, has urban drool, perhaps more so because we have more water coming on a regular basis. And I'm sure it brings some pretty toxic things with it to the river. Finally, talk briefly about the condition of the estuary and what you might do or what you see coming in the future in ways of preserving and protecting it.
The condition I mentioned before, this is one of the largest, most intact systems that we have here in Southern California. But we need to be here helping it along. And what we try and do is help nature help itself. That's one of the values of working with these natural systems, is that, you know, we believe that certainly in an urban area like this, you have to push it along and help out. I don't think we'll ever be able to sort of dust off our hands and say, okay, we're done, this system is fixed. So we need to keep on pushing on our conservation and restoration efforts that we do. A primary one that we're focusing now relates to this issue of tidal exchange and tidal flow into the system. One of our primary impacts that we've had is sediment coming across the border from the hillsides in Mexico and Tijuana, the sediment coming from the mesas, the higher lands up in Tijuana, down into the valley. And that's buried a lot of salt marsh. So what that does is you lose habitat. You have salt marsh and those wetland plants that get buried, and it turns into often sort of weed-dominated, low-quality habitat that's no longer tidal. So you lose that habitat and the species that live in those habitats, but you also lose this functioning of the system, where this place is filling with water at high tide, draining, filling, draining. So when it's filling with water at high tide, it's not filling with as much water as it used to, because we've filled in part of the area here. It's been filled with sediment that's come across the border. So when you lose that tidal exchange, it's a complicated system, but that river mouth, the connection between the estuary and the ocean, can tend to close off. And that creates tremendous problems for us when that river mouth closes. So one of the ways we deal with that river mouth closure is, if it looks like it's going to happen, we go out with bulldozers and the short-term fix of pop it open. We hope not to have to do that a whole lot. In the spirit of helping nature help itself, what we're trying to do is restoration, which consists of excavation of some of those areas that have been buried with sediment. So we'll restore the habitat that has been buried and get the marsh back and get the marsh birds back and the fish and the crabs and everything associated with the marsh, which is critical. But we'll also have this improved function where the tides are coming and going and sediment's being exported to the beach on the outgoing tides, and it helps keep the mouth open and it helps build the adjacent beaches so people can enjoy them, and the beaches themselves help protect the estuary. So that's a lot of what we're focused on, is thinking about both restoring habitat, but also restoring function and helping this place help itself.
We're speaking with Dr. Jeff Crooks. Jeff, I want to thank you so much for joining us this morning. It's been a wonderful experience. It was a wonderful experience being at the estuary with you, and I wish you all the best in preserving that estuary and in furthering the knowledge and the science of estuaries around the world.
Sure. Well, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.